recording?
Yeah, we're recording. Hey, this is
Brian Scuttle.
Ronnie Haynes.
Hey, Miles.
This is Yahoo's with a microphone. We're talking about Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith.
And we're off.
Thrilling discussion.
Hey, man, long time ago, guys, fire away.
And
circa 1977.
Mm-hmm. Nero's born.
Hey, man, you're old.
Yeah, so are you. So let's not rub it in.
Hey, man, I'm 78, dude. I'm 78. I got a year on you, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm 78, too. So I guess last Star Wars movie ever.
War!
Yep.
You know, I was reading online, and there's a lot of people that just thought that was stupid. There's some people that thought that was
stupid.
Yeah,
I mean, I do have to agree. It's like...
I like it.
I didn't expect...
Initially,
I
like it.
Lucas to be a little bit more professional. That just seems a little just...
No, you know what? Okay, if the...
War!
No, you know what? It goes back to... And I'm going to be probably mentioning this more than once, because you know how I am, but it goes back to... establishment of tone and believability.
Right.
And
that doesn't necessarily
establish
the right tone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it does.
Because he's always talking about this being, you know, a bit, you know, as
darker than, like, even Empire.
And, you know, and he's always talking about the language or the way that words are phrased and used as being sort of a different way than you see in typical movies, you know, sort of almost a theatrical, as in, like, theater.
Yeah.
Way of talking, so... You know, war screaming out at the beginning does not
yeah.
do that for
me. No, it really doesn't. You know. I do love this opening sequence, though. This is a really good opening
this part of the opening sequence is cool. The actual aerial battle blows.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard
really,
stuff.
You're really not that impressed with it.
No, not at all. I mean, I'll tell you at what moment it starts sucking.
I mean, this opening shot here is really good.
When did it start sucking?
I see no suckage here.
That's awesome. That's sweet. That's sweet. That's cool. Big, huge battle that we pan into from flipping around with airplanes.
I love the music here.
Yeah.
This is my favorite opening title music for a Star Wars movie. I just love it. It's just.
I have to agree with you on that. This is probably the best.
And I love it because of a reason that I might mention later, but I'll mention here because it's the first time I really thought about when I was first watching it, which was the fact that for me this is where you really hear the Jedi theme, the Force theme, as a real hero's theme.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first times you really hear it, and you hear it, I think, four key times in such a context in this movie, and this is the first one. I absolutely love it.
As soon as Anakin started talking, it just went down a notch. It's gonna go down
another
notch. Yeah, it's gonna go down another notch.
I mean, this is cool.
It's cool, but we're already going down.
See. How do you think about that line? The reference to Han's line, and which one is it for?
Oh yeah, that is that is a Han line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, see, now there are moments in both one and two where I just drop right out of the movie. You know, I mean, I pretty much believe episode one all up until, you know, the introduction of that damn kid, and then there's episode two. I'm pretty much believing just about every moment, you know, up until when that damn love story starts. And I don't ever necessarily experience a moment during episode three where I'm dropped completely out of the movie. I'm thrown completely off of, you know, I don't the believability factor is pretty much maintained. I mean, you know, again, it goes back to establishment of tone and.
Ron, do you want to make another attempt?
All right. Well,
we had some technical difficulties. You were talking about establishment of tone, Ron.
Yeah. Episode three, you know, I think is the, you know, If you look back to the first two movies and the tone Lucas was attempting to establish in those movies, you see it much more successfully done here, I think. It's like it's kind of like a funny but quirky delivery of dialogue, and the music and you see Lucas attempting to establish it, you see the actors attempting to establish it in the first two movies, but it never gets there. I just understand it here and I believe it. And and it's funny, it's quirky, it's dark, and it's all these kinds of going back, kind of like what I was trying to explain in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, before I ask Dave about what we just saw, I will say that I do sort of think that he got, especially the humor that he was going for, I do think he did that a lot better, especially starting in this scene, than he did in the first two. Now, Dave, I have to ask, the point with the little buzz droids here, are we continuing on that downward spiral?
Steadily declining very fast.
Okay.
Oh, I like the buzz droids.
I mean, I enjoy
them. Which is how we know we're steadily declining very fast.
I'll admit, I sort of got a kick out of this sequence when I saw it.
I thought, it's just for me that all the space battles in the original trilogies were always seemed to be
pretty serious in tone.
Yeah, pretty, and
there really wasn't an intense humor. If there were, it was in dialogue.
Right. And so, it's pretty intense, and you're almost on the edge of your seat a lot.
Yeah.
But for here, it just kind of went on a little too long, and we didn't see enough of those on the edge of your seat moments. We were supposed to have one with the stupid little buzz droid.
Yeah.
But that didn't work for me. And it was just a little too long.
That's a good point.
Right.
In general, with this opening sequence,
I think it's a very successful
opening. Your thoughts on the way he uses R2. I love the way he uses R2. It goes back to the original trilogy, R2-D2.
Right.
The R2-D2 we know and love. Starting with his little stuff with the buzz droids, which you're not a fan of, which is why I wanted to bring it up, because of the fact that I figured that was probably one of the things that made that sequence just sort of go downhill for him.
Knows that.
See, again, I don't see a flaw, in these opening moments. I really don't. It's not perfect, but it's.
Jumping out of the ship and fighting the droids, that happened really quick, really fast. I thought it was really, really well done.
Yeah. Introduction in the movie of General Grievous, who we were introduced to in the Clone Wars series.
Hey, another little thing, wasn't R4 killed in the Clone Wars animated shorts?
No,
he was. I promise. Go back to disc one of the animated Clone Wars, and R4 is blown up.
I don't remember that.
Maybe that was another R4.
Yeah, seriously. It's like there are all sorts of. This is funny. It's like, okay. But, I mean, you have to admit, though, it is keeping in tone with the prequel trilogy, even if it doesn't necessarily...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
You can take it sort of as a good thing or a bad thing. It may not have the dramatic weight, necessarily, of the original trilogy, but it does feel like a progression...
prequel
trilogy.
Right,
So, well, again, it goes back to recognizing the tone that was attempting to be established in the first two movies, but never was.
Yeah.
And if you go into this movie understanding that, you're gonna get a genuine kick out of it.
Right, right. And I feel that. It's just...
I mean, do you get where I'm coming from, Dave?
It's just, at some points, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, you know...
For me,
I can understand that. I mean, I really can. I do, like, you know, I love the R2 stuff, especially once they get on the ship.
Right.
You know, it's really funny. It's like, what are you people doing to me? Putting me in a rock, between a rock and a hard place here.
And I like the little, you know, the scene from episode one kind of turned on its ear. You know, the little moment of the Padawan kind of recognizing, you know, the part where, you know, he's like, you know, like pretty much my favorite line from episode one, you know, Master Destroy Us, and then, you know, just that little moment on the on the blockade ship, and then it's kind of being turned on its ear, and like, you know, there's kind of a darkness behind it.
That's probably my favorite joking line.
Oh yeah, the loose wire thing.
Yeah, it's just their exchange right there.
Yeah,
I think worked really well. The whole
and
exchange.
I mean, it does go back to something that they established really well in the Clone Wars series.
Right.
With the bond between the two.
Right.
And you really have to establish that bond because of the fact that it's going to be fractured irreparably at the end.
Right.
So,
which you know, I mean. Obviously, I don't think he really had enough time to establish that bond through just three movies. You know, which is why we have
because you know we had to see that epic love story.
Right.
So, well, I mean, you know that's something actually I wanted to bring up and I brought up in my review, and some people at work and I have had that discussion where, I mean, did in the first now I would say leave this one the way it is. Fundamentally, from a story standpoint, leave this one the way it is. But the first two movies, do you not think that they probably could have condensed the first and basically the key moments in the first and the second one into one movie, ending the first movie at the beginning of the Clone Wars, and then the second one just as the Clone Wars. Basically what we saw in the cartoon now.
Right. That could have possibly happened. That would have been a little tough. But that could have possibly happened.
But
the first one at the Clone Wars, that would have been tough.
Well, see, but the thing is, then, you know, and, you know, George Lucas would obviously argue the fact, then you don't worry, then maybe you don't have to show us Anakin as a child.
Right.
And that Anakin is a teenager when he is discovered by Qui-Gon, which would really hit home what they tried to do in episode 1 and 2, which is establish that here's why he's too old to be a Jedi.
Right.
So, because, I mean, if you look at the scene in episode 2 with the younglings and Yoda, it looks like a lot of those are Anakin's age in episode 1.
Right.
So it's like you sort of wonder about that, well, you know, what about the too old?
Right.
I mean, obviously you're establishing the fact that, well, he's made connections in his life, and that's what makes him too old, because you can't really have any connections as a Jedi, but... here, before we get to the end of the scene, Christopher Lee back as Count Dooku.
He's got his arm chopped off, hands chopped off there. That's gonna hurt.
No comments on Christopher.
Huh?
No comments on the Christopher Lee thing.
I love Christopher Lee in his role.
I'm
eating it up every time he's on screen. It's just.
I mean, I know he doesn't have a huge part in this movie, even though he really does. I mean. From a story standpoint, he does, but from an
well, he's fantastic throughout, you know, his entire contribution to this trilogy.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of funny that he's in two of the biggest trilogies of, you know, recent memory, and he's killed in like the first 15 minutes of both you know,
final movies.
I mean,
you go to the extended version of Return of the King.
Yeah. Yeah, and
we still have to do that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I like how well they did the because I mean, you know, Christopher Lee can't obviously flip off a balcony, you know. But,
no,
but the way they animated that, I thought looked pretty realistic. I think they kind of upped the level of, you know, technical ability with this movie again, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting among all these effects is we should acknowledge how Episode 3 wasn't even nominated for visual effects for 2000.
That's right, it wasn't. War of the Worlds got that nomination for ILM, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, War of the Worlds had fantastic imagery.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, Star Wars only ended up with one nomination.
For makeup. I mean, I'm glad it went to King Kong. I mean, King Kong had... You know, King Kong is great. We were just kind of like, you know, talking about at one point we were discussing the irony that the last Star Wars doesn't even get nominated for visual effects.
Yeah.
Or just kind of like the bittersweetness to it.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of this? I mean, it's one of those.
I'm loving it.
It's really just, you know, it's fun. It's kind of pointless, I guess, but.
It's
kind of some more fun R2 stuff, but.
I guess it's a storytelling technique, but, you know. But, you know, Star Wars is infamous for having these kind of disasters in the moment, you know, type sequences.
Who is the voice? Who's the guy who did the voice for?
It's somebody from ILM.
Yeah.
Because wasn't Gary Oldman at one point attached to that as well?
Yeah,
as John Rhys Davies. John Rhys Davies, Gary Oldman.
I don't remember hearing John Rhys Davies. I heard
Gary Oldman,
oh, but really? Because of the fact that Lucas wasn't using union actors, I believe was the reason he dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, part of the reason I mentioned that is that John DiMaggio, who did the voice of Bender on Futurama, actually provided the voice for Grievous on the Clone Wars series. And I thought he did a really good job in that, and it would have been fun to hear him in that.
Well, all the voice work in the Clone Wars was
really
on the money, I think.
Although I do like Grievous' voice here.
I do too.
It's excellent. But I think it's more of an effect of you know, all the effects they put on the voice of this guy that did it.
And a lot of people made a comment, I believe, about the fact that Grievous coughs. That's going back to something in the Clone Wars where Tim L. Jackson, you know, uses Jedi powers on him. And
Ewan McGregor is Al Guinness in this.
Well, I think that was the best.
That was the intention.
That was one of the best casting. Was one of the best castings.
Almost makes that for the child, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Almost.
No, I like all this stuff. I mean, I'm digging.
No, I mean, I completely, you know, it's like I said in my review. I mean, I really felt like this. This was something, you know, this movie just felt epic.
Mm-hmm.
You look back at the first two movies in this prequel trilogy, there are moments that feel epic, but the entire thing don't really feel that way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This one does from start to finish.
And I think...
There's real purpose to it.
Yeah, and I've said this before, I think this is better than Return of the King.
I think
this is a better trilogy capper.
I would not go that far.
I would.
You know what?
Because you know, it goes back to a discussion Brian and I were having that, like, you know, this movie didn't have as much to live up to as Return of the King did. I love the first two War of the Rings movies.
But the thing is, though, it's like, I mean, that.
I just think this is a better capper. Trilogy capper than Return of the King.
But I think that's the reason you probably think that, and the reason is because of the fact that there's just, you know...
Again, there wasn't that much to live up to. I mean, I realize that.
What do you guys think about the fact that we don't really have any music right here?
I mean, I never really thought about it.
Yeah,
I kind of noticed
the lack the first time, you know?
Yeah, I never really thought about it, actually.
It works.
You know, I think it works. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you've got to know when to use music and when not to use music as a filmmaker, and I think he makes the right choices.
Are we doing okay over there?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. But, you
know, we got the music here. And this really was, I absolutely love this music. I know, I love this score. I thought it was just a sensational score coming off of what happened in episode two. It was just such a vindication that, you know, I mean, it wasn't a vindication of John Williams so much as it was George Lucas, because I don't think any of us can really blame John Williams for what happened in episode two, even though I don't think we've ever really found out.
No, we never have.
But, and it's probably best that we don't, for everybody involved, but,
what I like about the ship designs is that it takes us even more towards, you know, sort of the original ship designs that, sort of the ship designs we see in the originals, yet still keeps, you know.
And that's the thing you notice in the first aerial battle, you know, you see the evolution of what becomes the X-Wing, what becomes the TIE Fighters, and, you know, the Imperial
Star Destroyers.
Star Destroyers. I mean, that was the whole idea in the first place. I mean, this is, it's interesting. This is the last movie of trilogy of the series, but finishing in the middle. So it has, this one more than any other movie in the prequel trilogy, has to connect the two series.
Mr. Glass is half full.
Yeah.
Not to worry, we're still flying passion. I think we should do this at some point, if, like, whenever we're watching one of those, one of our fanboy, you know, we need to get like a little tiny sand thing, a little sand, what are you talking about?
Hourglass?
Hourglass. One of those little tiny ones for, like, board games. And, like, anytime one of us quotes a line when somebody's saying it, we have to, like, we can't talk for 30 seconds.
Actually, I've got a decent size. I think we might have
one of those little tiny ones for, like, a board game.
No, it's actually a pretty decent size.
No, but I'm talking about, like, just one of those little tiny ones.
No, I'm going to run up for an hour.
My grandfather, I think, had an hourglass, and it was about.
But you know what I'm talking about, like those little tiny ones that come with like
zero
percent.
No, exactly what you mean. I'm just saying, I have one that might do the trick even better.
You quote the movie, you can't talk for 30 seconds. I think we should do something like that.
That's easy for me. I try not to.
Another crash landing that we just saw on Serenity.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, we did, didn't we?
Yeah, this one.
This one,
they had a couple more bucks on this one than they did in Serenity. So.
Yeah, but this one at Serenity actually was much
actually
better.
A little better, I think.
Actually, I mean, you know, the visual effects may not be quite as extravagant, but at the same time, it's actually a little more realistic too. Right? And by a little, I mean a lot.
Right.
But,
well, there's a sense of reality in Serenity. There's a sense of reality in this one.
Yeah,
it's two completely different senses of reality. I mean, I'm just having fun with this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know, I think that's.
No, I mean,
that's ultimately the point, I think.
That was the thing watching this for the first time. I mean, I
was
a complete kick out of it. I mean,
I'm just like, I mean, I was just blown away by how fun the opening was.
Yeah.
And just how, you know. But anyway, you know, back to this being better than Return of the King. You get where I'm coming from, though. I mean,
I get what you're coming from, but do you think it's, would you say, not taking into consideration what came before, just
yes,
looking
I do
at
think
it
it's a better
movie.
Film. I do think it's a better film than Return of the King. As a film that stands alone, I think it's better than Return of the King. I'm sorry. I know I can't, you know, because I'm not as articulate as you guys are when it comes to I just there are so many moments in Return of the King that I'm just gonna, like, you know, you guys are gonna wanna beat the crap out of me, but like I just don't believe half of it.
We've had that discussion and we really need to save that for commentary.
Yeah, but
which evidently we've been too afraid to do up until this point.
Can you blame us?
Not really.
But I just think, as a standalone film, I think this is better.
Okay.
This is probably. I mean, you were mentioning, you know, during Serenity that was your favorite movie of 2005. This is my favorite movie of 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
That's fine. Okay. This is my second favorite movie of 2005.
Okay. Then. Okay. Serenity is my second favorite movie of 2005.
That's probably good with my girl.
Yeah, Natalie Portman.
Oh, just, I mean,
just this was the best casting of the prequel trilogy. I think just slightly ahead of Ewan McGregor.
No, I think Ewan McGregor was better.
As a performance, Ewan McGregor was better. But he had a little more to go with than Natalie Portman.
Well, not to mention, I don't think Natalie Portman ever really was all that proud of her, you know, role in this. I mean, just like, she's just...
I mean, I've heard some kind of...
She's just out of line.
...derogatory things from...
obviously, without question, but just Natalie Portman, she's just out to lunch, especially in this movie. You know, she's just not. I mean, you know, she's a superb actress, so she, you know, she can be out to lunch and pull this off. But you know,
she doesn't have as much to do in this movie.
Yeah,
but that's the nature of the role. Mm-hmm, I mean, right. that has more to do with her role in this thing. I mean, you know, no, she's not going to, like, go battles and stuff like that, in episode 1 and 2, because of the fact that she has a very specific role in the fact that she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. So,
and just overall, I mean, Lucas is infamous for being able to pull out crappy performances out of really, really, really good actors.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and we see some of that here, you know.
Yeah.
Just performances that are not quite up to what the actors could possibly do, because I don't think the direction was quite as good. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But, like, how superb was she in V for Vendetta, though? I mean, she
Oh, I thought... Oh, my God. I thought she was phenomenal.
She was great.
I mean,
she looked great.
That's one of her, like, 2 or 3 best performances
ever. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But, I mean, I'm not saying she hasn't done better work. I mean, she clearly has. But, I mean, you know, I'm just saying that...
Well, it's not like, and it's not like she sucks in this movie.
In this role... That makes sense to me, and I can see why.
Mm-hmm.
But
this is a great cue.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a deluxe two-disc album.
But I don't think, like, especially like what would happen with the soundtrack to the episode 2. Do you really think that's gonna happen?
Oh, I wouldn't want one for episode. I mean, I no, would I'm want saying, one for I'm episode saying, 2, but I'd want one with John Williams' original music.
Well, I'm
for
saying,
the last 45 minutes, I wouldn't want...
But I'm saying, though, with the quote-unquote controversy surrounding...
No, I don't think we'll ever see it, but I would still want...
Nor will we ever probably see a, you know, deluxe special edition soundtrack for this, I don't think. You know.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, I don't think we'll ever see it, but I mean, I'd still want it.
Mm-hmm.
But
some great animation in Grievous.
Yeah,
this is a spectacular job. I think he's probably the best animated character in here.
Yeah.
He's right up there with Watto, you know, you know. Of course, none of these guys hold a candle to Jar Jar, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like we're just going to leave Jar Jar out to dry here. I mean, you know, I'll admit he's not the greatest character in the world, but
poor
still,
Jar Jar.
I mean,
here
we go with some not so
No, no, you know what the most cringeworthy story. The most cringeworthy moment, it's coming up.
You know
it's
what?
Coming up.
There's like cringe is hard.
No.
There's some not too bad stuff in this scene. I'm not saying it's a horrible
scene. It's just overall,
but I mean,
all the love scenes, I was like, okay, these are crap, but not really all that bad. Maybe one or two moments that we could actually see that they might like each other.
Yeah.
But you know, you always expect them to all be really, really bad, and then one that's just right, just rock bottom. But all of these.
Mm-hmm. No, I've never really hit. No, are any of us getting up and walking out of the room?
No.
No.
Okay. And I'm not saying this is a bad scene. I mean, there are some moments in this scene where it's like.
No, but you do believe it though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
Was it just lack of? Well, we know what it was. I mean, it's bad writing. Lack of chemistry. Was that a piece of it?
That was a big part of for me anyway in episode two. It was like severe lack of chemistry.
Yeah, he's been working out. Yeah, brother.
Pump that. I like what they did with the robot hand. That looks believable right there.
Yeah,
I
mean, it does.
Like, I was like really curious how they were gonna do that, especially with you know, his shirt being.
I lose a few more pounds and look like that.
Hmm.
He's gone, baby. He used even less.
Beautiful love theme by
John. Knocked you up!
Beautiful love theme by John Williams.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
No, but I just believe. Saying. You know, I believe all this, you know, this bedside drama.
No, this is actually a good scene.
Yeah, this
is a really good scene between the two.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good scene between the two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Baby, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's made of rich poor snippet. It'll bring you good fortune.
Sorry. How can you remember a live dialogue from that movie? It's beyond me. Seriously. And live dialogue like that. I mean,
it brought back painful memories.
I'm in pain inside. I'm in pain inside.
Mm. All the music here is just.
Oh yeah, the music here is wonderful.
So beautifully solid.
You know, it's like I mean, I'm more familiar with the music than you are, Ron. But
mm-hmm.
there's a moment here where. I mean, I'm sure it's completely unintentional, I'm sure, on Williams' part, but it actually sort of reminds me of the love theme music between Buffy and Riley and Buffy.
Oh, really?
Actually, there's this little moment
interesting.
That just is sort of from that.
Oh, yeah.
Part of that theme, and it's like
established in Hush.
Yeah, in right? Hush.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow.
I'm gonna go listen to that.
I mean, this cue is on the soundtrack.
Mm, oh, I know. I just never made that.
I mean, it's just a little moment. It's not a huge moment, but it's a little moment. Like I said, it's completely unintentional, I'm sure, but no doubt. But because John Williams, greatest film composer ever lived,
Christoph Beck,
great TV composer, really had his time to really. Shine on the big screen.
Yeah.
But has done some pretty decent work.
I'm glad to see him, you know, moving on to, you know, film
oh, yeah.
scores. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yoda.
This is the very first scene with Yoda.
Yeah.
Which is kind of it's not necessarily a show off
nope.
scene or anything really. It's very subtle, wonderful animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the lighting.
You really can see in this movie, I mean, even though you're not a huge fan of it, Dave, wouldn't you agree that you see sort of an evolution and sort of a maturity in Lucas's writing and directing? It's still not great.
Right.
But it's certainly much more polished than it was in episode one.
Right. Which again leads us to a movie that does try to capture his tone a little
yeah.
bit better. You know?
Yeah.
You know, because he got a little bit better at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, you know, what has anybody ever talked about the? I know people have talked about it, but I just haven't really found a good discussion of sort of the religious what religions today would, you know, be close.
We discussed it a little bit in episode one.
Did we?
Yeah.
Like Buddhism.
Like the parallels of religion.
Well, I mean,
Buddhism. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about the sort of idea of sort of Anakin sort of being like a Christ-like figure.
Right.
But
I was thinking
more.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
there's a little bit of a Buddha kind of religious,
specific religion.
Right, beyond that.
That is kind of a Buddha mentality, though, right there, what Yoda was just talking about. Isn't
yeah.
It?
Sort of the middle path, you know, let go of everything, sort of an enlightenment,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's sort of a little start of the intrigue.
Yeah. Now we should finally mention the real star of this movie, Ian McKellen, Chancellor Palpatine slash Emperor
slash Darth Sidious. Yeah, I was just I know why this didn't happen, but I really was pushing. I was hoping he would be nominated for this, but you know, I mean, I know why he wasn't. But you know, it's just like, you know, it's going back to, you know, what Alfred Molina and Spider-Man 2,
yeah.
And it's like, you know, just all the injustice, you know, the really phenomenal, you know, performances, you know, just in the
kind of get looked over in popcorn movies
because of the type of movie that they show up in, you know, which is.
I think he's going to be nominated just for kind of all the parts, you know, for all three. You know, it would be good to see him nominated for this movie.
Yeah,
because of all the other movies. Mm-hmm.
But I think we discussed at one point that because this trilogy didn't necessarily, you know, acquire the clout
than maybe
Lord of the Rings did.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to get the attention.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, this series achieved that clout the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the second time around, I mean, that's really pushing it. I mean, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with if we see like Harry Potter gain in critical and award esteem over the years. Because I know certainly the acclaim for each of the movies is increased.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the story has gotten more in depth, and the story's gotten better.
Yeah.
I thought the story was great all the time, but you know, mm-hmm. more and more of the Phoenix is going to have some really good stuff in it, which will make it more open to that.
Yeah.
Well, just, you know, I mean, referring to, you know, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, I mean, just another reason that this trilogy never, you know, acquired the clout that it, you know, never got was because, everyone's affection, you know, just you know, went to those other, you know, film series, rightfully so.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, the first Star Wars kind of, you know, one of its kind. I mean, these guys had some serious competition.
Mm-hmm. You have to also take into consideration, which we've sort of touched on a little bit here, the fact that the first two movies, this series does have a sharp decline in quality from the original three.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're still good movies, but there's still a tremendous decline.
Right.
And it's like, it's going to be interesting to bring up another series that's just now beginning, which is Chronicles of Narnia. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there, because I was not overly impressed with the first movie of that series.
Right.
Ultimately, nor was I.
I thought it was good. There were some good things, but there was a lot of stuff that really held it back for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be interesting, Disney. The more we get into, well, we can talk about that, but we can talk. There are some other things, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they can progress in terms of adapting those books.
Mm-hmm. But, I'm certainly going to be interested in seeing more of that.
Yeah. We're really off topic here.
I don't think we're...
I mean, that we've strayed as far as we have in the past.
Yeah.
But you know, again, how much can you actually say? How much can you actually say about a movie that's actually good? That's what I can.
Yeah.
That's why I don't argue, you know, us going off on tangents, just because you can only say so much about a movie that's actually good. I mean, if this was...
Well, we could hand it off to Dave.
We're building to some big events. You know,
yeah, we're really not getting... Yeah. I mean, that scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan, there's not really a whole lot to say.
Right,
it's
expositional.
I like the use of that scene in the trailer with the music from the
Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah,
and or was dun, some
dun,
Jedi.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
and I love the use of that scene in the trailer.
Yeah. And here's another one where we're talking about the prophecy that was brought up in episode one.
Brian, how into the deleted scenes did you get? Did you see?
I think I watched all of them.
Yeah, because I was glad that what was taken out was taken out.
Oh, I was too.
I mean, that
I was not really impressed with the deleted scenes at
not,
all.
Nor was I.
I mean, there was a very. I never thought, oh, that would have been great to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the thing that I thought was interesting, one of the things I wanted to make sure I brought up was, this is the only movie, and I believe this was the case, of the prequels that did not get altered between the theatrical release and the DVD, because if you remember in episode one, he had some extensions of scenes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I believe he did Pod the race. Same in episode two.
Yeah, a little bit.
But this is the one, this is the only one where from the theatrical to the DVD, mm-hmm. there's nothing that's different.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that he finally got to tell the story that he wanted to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a sense of completeness to it, which, you know.
This is probably the least favorite outfit that she wears.
Yeah.
Her outfits are always amazing. You know,
yeah.
Whoever imagines that up for her character.
Well, who's that? Trisha Biggar? Is that the name of the costume designer?
I don't remember.
Yeah,
the costumes in these movies were always... For her,
exactly.
Especially, were always just amazing.
Oh god, this is my
yeah,
line.
Yeah, it really isn't a great.
Call me like you did on Naboo. Just like
yeah, that really was not a great line. I mean, there's like wow.
We're not walking out of the room. So
I love this.
This scene
is great. The music, all of it. Glory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things that I love about John Williams in the prequel trilogy, his use of vocals and
mm-hmm.
choir is
mm-hmm.
just extraordinary. George Lucas here.
And with his daughter. With his daughter.
Oh, really?
That's his daughter, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And his other daughter talking to her boyfriend.
Hmm.
Didn't you listen to the commentary?
No. Actually, I haven't.
You haven't? Well,
no,
you know.
I've never listened to a commentary.
Well, you know what's interesting?
It was like episode three. It took me forever to listen to ICOM. Or episode two, it took me forever to listen to ICOM.
You know, that's the thing. Like, what I realized, you know, soon after I finally bought, you know, episode three, I was like, I actually, you know, and I'm, because like the extras in episode three are not that.
No,
you're not
they're really not that good compared to
one and two.
Episode one or two.
You know, and what was interesting is that, like, you know, I was like, I still watched the DVDs for one and two, essentially just for the extras.
Yeah.
And like this one,
because of the movie.
I actually got because of the movie, and thankfully, you know,
yeah.
thankfully so, just because like the extras were just not that great. I mean, that Rick McCallum documentary is just kind of. Tedious and,
yeah, you know. I mean, it's interesting in a way.
I see the point he's trying to,
you know. You know, it's like if you really want to learn about, you know,
yeah.
all the things that go into making a film, that's a good documentary to watch.
Yeah, but.
But it's not something like the
episode
one documentary on episode one where
yeah.
you go and watch it over and over.
Right.
Because it's so interesting.
It is.
Very tedious.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
it's
it
like
is.
Catering? I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I know they need to be fed, but do they need to really mention it? It's like, that's sort of a
mm-hmm.
given.
I get the point he's trying to make, but...
Yeah. I think this is probably the best written scene in the entire movie.
Yes.
I would have to say this is probably my one of my favorite
and
scenes.
And Ian McDiarmid's best scene.
Yeah. In terms of dialogue or just in terms of overall? I mean, it's mostly dialogue.
Overall. I'm talking overall. I'm talking about the look, the music, the performances, the dialogue.
Well, I'm saying, like, look how little, you know, the special effects actually play a part in this. I mean, all talking heads, and it's incredible.
And this is really the one scene where I could honestly say that, like, the writing makes it work.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. which is difficult to say about these three movies.
And if anything, it's because of the fact that he brings up an interesting idea of how Anakin came to be in the...
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, in the discussion of his mentor, or who we assume might be his mentor.
Don't you mean Palpatine?
Palpatine came to be?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about how Anakin.
Well, yeah, his virginal birth.
The manipulation of the midichlorians.
Right.
That's his name, Darth Plagueis.
And we're supposed to be watching an opera, right?
Yeah, sort of a literal space opera.
Right.
Yeah. Which we're watching on screen. Space opera within a space opera.
Yes. Mm-hmm.